Lakeview Village versus HUD. Ms. Camden?
May it please the court? The district court dismissed Crestview's complaint on Rooker-Feldman grounds under Rule 12b-1 and for failure to state a claim under Rule 12b-6. Now, Crestview believes that both of those decisions were wrong, and further, that dismissal under Rule 12b-1 precluded dismissal under Rule 12b-6.
So where is the amended complaint that you wanted to file? Do we have it?
No, Your Honor, you do not.
Well, wouldn't it be helpful to us if we'd known what you wanted to do?
Your Honor, the district court did not allow Crestview to file the amended complaint.
Well, I mean, they couldn't. He wouldn't accept it for filing. You obviously could submit it and make it a part of the record. You can always do that, right?
Your Honor, the district court did
like
not
an
allow
offer of proof. You know, you say, all right, Judge, you don't want me to file this amended complaint, but I'd like to be part of the record so the Court of Appeals can see what that I really did have a good, you know, theory on which I could draft an amended complaint.
Yes, Your Honor. Crestview's trial counsel attempted to do exactly that.
I don't understand attempt. Did the judge say I will not permit you to put a complaint into the record?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, I find that hard to believe.
At the February 28th hearing, a transcript of which appears in the record and which is discussed extensively in our briefs, Crestview describes how the district court judge...
No, the judge said, I'm not going to let you file an amended complaint. The judge didn't say, I'm not going to let you put your amended complaint into the record because I don't want the Court of Appeals to see what it would be, right? He didn't do that.
I do not believe that the district
would
court judge...
Would it help us if we saw what amended complaint you wanted to file? How are we supposed to know whether it's worth remanding this case to let you file an amended complaint when, for all we know, the amended complaint you'd file would be completely off the wall?
Excuse me, where in your brief, in your appendix, is that shown? Where he rejected your right to present it or have it as part of the record at all?
Your Honor, the transcript of that hearing appears in the appendix, I believe, at pages 37 to 41. 37 to 41, I believe, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And in fact, Judge Posner, your concerns are borne out in the fact that the district court denied Crestview's leave to file the amended complaint because he believed that it would be futile for Crestview to do so. Now, the district court made that determination despite the fact that he had not reviewed the proposed amended complaint. Obviously, a finding of futility could not be made without actually reviewing the complaint. In fact, Judges, at that February 28th...
I would not allow filing of the amended complaint, but that doesn't mean he would forbid you to attach it as an exhibit, right? How could he do that?
Your Honor, at the February 28th hearing, he denied Crestview...
Did he say he's going to tear it out of your motion, going to tear it up and put it in his shredder so we wouldn't see it?
Judge Posner is trying to make the point about making the record from your standpoint. The court wouldn't let you file it. We understand that. But for making a record for us to review whether or not the court should have allowed it, you still have the right, as counsel, to say, I just want to make this part of the record. We understand the court isn't. And so there was no request by you to do that, right, to make it as part of the record.
There was, Your Honor. And that's precisely the,
well,
and
rip
that's precisely
open,
the problem.
Rip open the pay sheet and read it to me.
Yeah. States that.
Go ahead. You can read it. Read it where it says that.
Pardon me. I need to retrieve. Yes, at page 41 of the appendix. It says that the district court says that he did not believe that there was any possibility of an amended complaint curing the defects of the original complaint.
Right. Right. And you disagree, so... Again, as Judge Williams said, he forbade you to file the amended complaint. He didn't forbid you to make it a part of the record so that the appellate court could see that there really was a basis for an amended complaint. Otherwise, we're left, vague as to just whether this suit should be kept alive. What did you want to say in your amended complaint?
Your Honor, if the district court had allowed Crestview to file an amended complaint, it could have made out a claim under...
The very last thing he says... I have indicated previously I will take it under consideration, your motion for reconsideration, but I will not allow filing an amended complaint because I think it serves no useful purpose based on the court's prior ruling, which was that it was a final and appealable order, and it was the last one. But there was nothing that stopped you from offering it as an offer of proof for purposes of maintaining a record. Because we have no idea what you sought to file.
That's right, Your Honor, and neither did the district court. Which is...
I know, but we don't worry about the district court now. They have no jurisdiction. It's now our problem. And we don't know what was offered down there. Did he refuse it? You say it was error to refuse.
Yes.
See the problem?
Yes, Your Honor. Under Rule 15, a plaintiff always has the right to file an amended complaint.
Sure he does, but we don't have to pay any attention to the amended complaint, but we do. I mean, if he... We don't know what was offered. Do we?
No, Your Honor.
So we don't know whether he was right or wrong in his acceptance or refusal. As far as he offered to file his amended complaint, a copy of a news story in a newspaper, he'd be perfectly right to say you did nothing wrong, but you'd still have to attach it and get it to us so we know what it was he was doing or not doing.
In that case, a district court would not have to, perhaps would not have to review the amended complaint to decide whether or not allowing the filing of it would be...
Well, I don't know what he revealed, but he said, I will take it under consideration, but I would not allow the filing of the amended complaint. I understand. Let's see. I did not because I felt there was a basis, and therefore I think counsel perhaps gives a more definitive in saying there's a final appealable order. The reason he didn't take it was he said, I'm finished. I'm done. It's too late.
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, the...
And you had allowed him to... I mean, it's very strange because you... Because if indeed there was a final order, then it was too late for you to file an amended complaint. But it wasn't a final order, but you didn't tell him it wasn't a final order. He thought it was a mm-hmm. final order. So you induced this error by him. Mm-hmm. So I mean,
no,
you're the author of your own... problems.
No,
did you try the case, by the way?
Crestview had different trial counsel.
I'm sorry?
I said you don't get credit for it then. I mean, it wasn't your fault. It was somebody else's fault we're talking about.
Yes, Your Honor. In fact,
didn't the trial lawyer tell the judge that he didn't know anything about federal procedure?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well... Why should the other side and the district judge, so to speak, pay the price because your lawyer, the trial lawyer, not knowing a procedure, allowed the judge to make this mistake?
Well, the fact is the trial counsel for Crestview, as well as the counsel for the government, believed that the order was final, as did the district court. With regard to your question of whether or not Crestview induced that error, that doctrine only would apply if Crestview had actually been able to persuade the district court to adopt its point of view. Crestview was trying to get the district court to allow it to file an amended complaint. Crestview failed in that enterprise, and so Crestview did not induce an error.
Well, now, what is it that you would say in your amended complaint if it were filed, if you could file it? I still don't know what your case is.
Crestview would allege acts of by the defendants of a conspiracy to close
the federal
down.
Or just the Crestview?
I am
genuinely confused because, as I understand it, he didn't offer the amended complaint. He says it was too thick and he didn't have time to file it. And that's on page 34. I was under the impression that in order to have a complete record, all the documents would be allowed. And the motion for the First Amendment complaint is an attached to my memo, but it's so thick I can't put everything in one document to staple it. I'm not saying it's filed. I understand it's not filed, but I wanted it in the record. And his opponent says, Judge, you can't have it both ways. Either he's going to file a First Amendment or he's going to drop the motion to reconsider. So I'm now totally at sea, but absent the an amended complaint or whatever was offered there, I don't know what we have to go on.
Yes, Your Honor, that's what I was discussing earlier, that the district court did not allow the proposed amended complaint to be attached. Either,
as a motion to reconsider. They're two separate things.
Attached to the motion to reconsider, yes,
yeah.
That's right.
But you have to have a motion to file an amended complaint separate from the motion to reconsider. The motion to reconsider what?
Crestview had moved to that the district court alter or amend its February 5th order granting the motion to dismiss filed by all of the defendants except Defendant Perry.
You mean the dismissal order, to reconsider the dismissal order?
Yes, that's right.
That's separate from the motion to file an amended complaint, isn't it?
Crestview's trial counsel intended to, desire to file an amended complaint.
Yeah. But he attached it to the motion to reconsider.
He desired to, yes.
Said it was too thick to staple, too. It must have been a beaut. Maybe that's why it wasn't attached. Here.
Of course, permission, I'd like to move on.
So what is it you want to show? If you filed an amended complaint, what would you charge? And my first question, I thought the federal defendants are out. Are they out? Or you want to charge them as part of the conspiracy? The HUD people?
Crestview is not pursuing claims against the Department of Housing and Urban Development, but is pursuing claims against...
Okay, so your argument is what? That HUD officers, HUD employees conspired with Crestview Village people and this...
No, Your Honor, with the state defendants, with the city of Kankakee and the officers.
With Kankakee and who else? Who are the other conspirators? Another developer?
Yes, Your Honor.
So they conspired to do in Crestview.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that your argument? And they did that for racial reasons or pecuniary reasons or what?
For reasons related to the racial makeup of the tenants, yes, Your Honor.
Now, what is the significance of the consent decree in which Crestview acknowledged hundreds of building code violations?
For purposes of this complaint, none, Your Honor. And the reason is that...
What do you mean, this complaint?
For the purposes of this case.
Yeah.
None, because Crestview seeks relief that has nothing to do with that agreed order. Crestview would not seek to undo the agreed order. And the relief that Crestview seeks would not call into question the fact that code violations existed.
So you accept the validity of that consent decree?
Yes, Your Honor, in full. There were three counts against Crestview. Crestview won summary judgment on two of them, and as to the third, the code violations, Crestview admitted that code violations existed. But the fact that code violations existed, Your Honor, has nothing to do with Crestview's theory that the code was selectively enforced against Crestview for purposes related to the racial makeup of the tenants.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a selective enforcement equal protection clause claim.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Camden. Mr. Koenig?
morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'd like to present the arguments on behalf of the City of Kankakee that we advance in our brief. But first, I'd like to address a few of the comments that Your Honors have made concerning the issue of filing an amended complaint. I think any fair reading of the colloquy that occurred between counsel for the plaintiff and counsel for the federal
Were
government...
Were you there?
I was not there, Your Honor, and folks did from my office was.
I read it twice, and I still don't know what happened out there.
Well, what happened, Your Honor,
Mr. Ling was there.
Pardon?
Mr. Ling was there.
Correct. Mr. Ling was there.
Ask him. Go ahead.
He should know. If you refer to page 34 of the appendix, what essentially had occurred is after colloquy occurred between the court and counsel, they left and then came back, and Mr. Ling commented that he felt that, quote, plaintiff's counsel was under the impression that the court allowed a motion to leave to file an amended complaint. Judge Hibbler responded, no, I did not. And then again at page 37 of the appendix, what Judge Hibbler again stated was, so what I will do is the amended complaint, there is no leave to file the amended complaint. That's what the comment of the court. So there was no request, a clear request stating, Your Honor, I need this to be a part of the record or so I can have a record on appeal. Equally important, plaintiff's counsel is suggesting that there's some unfairness that occurred below. Judge Hibbler at page 38 of the appendix, of plaintiff's appendix, which would be at page 11, plaintiff's counsel said he needs to submit the complaint so he can tell the court what changes I've made in the complaint. And Judge Hibbler responded, let me say this, I think that's sort of nonsensical. I have to see it for you to tell me how you changed it? That's not true. The plaintiff could have, and apparently did, raise in his answering, his memorandum in support of his Rule 59.
To say what he was going to say.
That's right.
But in all fairness to your opponent, she didn't need much of a chance to take any position. So, I mean...
There is no suggestion in the record that in their memorandum they were somehow denied the opportunity or the ability.
I mean today and not then.
Okay, that's correct. I'm sorry, Your Honor. So there's no suggestion that they were somehow denied the ability or opportunity to fairly present their basis for requesting reconsideration or their basis for arguing that they could cure the deficiencies, that the jurisdictional deficiencies that Judge Hibbler found in the complaint. Several mechanisms were available for them to have filed their amended complaint, most notably with the Rule 59 motion. The Rule 59 motion was filed. Their amended complaint could have been attached as an exhibit suggesting to the court, here is what we plan on saying. We're not requesting leave to file it, but it's here as an exhibit in order for us to make a record.
Of course, to do that, it would have had to be in two parts, right, because it was so big.
Well, I guess the local rule limitations only provide for 15-page limitations on memoranda. I've never seen any limitation on exhibits or attachments, Your Honor. So I think any suggestion that they were somehow unfairly treated by Judge Hibbler is simply not the case based upon the record when one considers that they could have attached the amended complaint or their proposed amended complaint, not filing it, attached it as an exhibit, as an attachment to their Rule 59 motion.
But at the end of her argument, didn't Ms. Camden articulate a perfectly good theory of liability, which is that these officials and the developer and so on were racially motivated to pick on Crestview? Sure, it had hundreds of building code violations, but they picked on it and harassed it and so on, drove it into bankruptcy, what have you. So why wouldn't that be a good theory, just in terms of surviving a motion to dismiss?
Well, if I could address a procedural matter first. Those issues and those allegations or those theories of recovery are the creativity of appellate counsel. Those were never advanced as bases for relief before Judge Hibbler.
It's hard to say because we don't have this amended complaint. Are you saying this was not going to be in the amended complaint if they had, or do we know? Did they say in their motion to did Berger, whatever his name is, did he say in his motion for reconsideration that what I want to do is, you know, recast this suit as a racial discrimination suit, not as a collateral attack on the consent order?
Your Honor, no. And as of the date of the presenting of the Rule 69 motion, he continued to maintain, and that's found at I believe that's found at page 13 of the record at appendix 40. He continued to maintain that what we say is that this was a sham proceeding. Sham proceeding means a proceeding that has no basis in fact.
The consent order, the proceeding that ended in the consent, that's what they're calling a sham.
Correct.
That's their collateral attack.
Correct. If they were maintaining that the state court action was a sham proceeding, and if it was a sham proceeding, they were continuing to pursue the same theories that they advanced before Judge Shader from the get-go. They were saying, as alleged in the complaint, that the city filed, the filings were made by the city when they knew they had no basis in law or fact. And
excuse me, is he cutting into the next man's argument, or is he's on his own? Sorry, keep going.
No, Your Honor, I am cutting into the next side's argument.
He said you're not. He keeps the clock.
I think I've got a few more minutes, Your Honor.
Fire away.
The complaint alleges that they were being forced to defend unsubstantiated lawsuits. If this case is not a collateral attack on the consent decree that was entered into, there's no question concerning the validity of the consent decree. They say, well, we never, you know, the demolition action was a sham proceeding. The demolition count was added by amendment to the complaint. It specifically incorporated the allegations of count one, allegations to which the plaintiffs admitted existed, 360-some violations.
Were the code violations ever cured?
Your Honor, as we speak, Crestview is in bankruptcy, and we're still waiting for things to be cured, as I understand the current proceedings.
Well, now, the court clearly denied Crestview's opportunity to file that amended complaint. But your position would be the district court didn't err because they didn't advance a viable legal theory. They never articulated that for the court, what the difference would have been.
That is one of my theories, correct, Your Honor, that they never advanced a viable theory. They never advanced a theory over which the court would have jurisdiction under Rooker-Feldman principles. And we maintain that under Rooker-Feldman, in light of the six or seven, eight different types of tests that the court has talked about.
In the allegation that the city and other officials had conspired to file phony lawsuits against them, was there a statement as to why you made that conspiracy? Was it based on race?
Race, Your Honor. Yeah, the allegations were it was racially motivated and we were racially
why
motivated.
Didn't, as Judge Posner pointed out, why doesn't that state a cause of action?
May very well state a cause of action, Your Honor, but I'm raising first the issue of Rooker-Feldman application. If they are alleging that there was an illegally motivated filing and it was baseless, that's Rooker-Feldman. That's what
it could be baseless if there was an agreed order that they admitted.
Essentially, that's it. If they've admitted to violations, and Gary V. Giles, the decision of this court is the closest that I could find, is that a politically motivated condemnation action falls within the Rooker-Feldman doctrine, and a court has no jurisdiction over a 1983 claim which would allege that a condemnation proceeding was filed for political reasons. If an illegal motivation First Amendment condemnation action falls within Rooker-Feldman, we would maintain that a racially motivated demolition action or code enforcement action in which it's alleged that the proceedings were baseless also fall within the Rooker-Feldman doctrine, and it's an issue over which the court do not have jurisdiction. I'm now
okay. Thank you, Mr. Koenig. Mr. Ling?
I was desperately anxious for you to step up because I want you to tell me what happened. Who offered what and what happened?
Well, procedurally what happened was this, Your Honor. We had filed I have to go back a little bit to answer your question, if I may.
Go ahead, just so I get the answer. I don't know what happened.
All right. We filed a motion to dismiss, and they never responded to it. They asked for extensions of time first to respond to the amended complaint, and then they asked for an extension of time to respond or alternatively to have additional time to think about filing an amended complaint because they had to do research to figure out how it was that they were supposed to do it and what was supposed to be in the amended complaint. The order came down, and then they filed what they entitled a Rule 59E motion for relief from final judgment. the motion was brought under Rule 59E.
Okay.
We responded to it as such. During the my recollection of what happened during court was that there was a colloquy, there was an argument, that was a period of time in which Crespu's trial counsel pleaded ignorance and asked for that to be considered as a basis for reconsideration of the dismissal of the lawsuit. And then it was given leave to file a Rule 59E motion. It did not have a supporting memorandum at that time. It asked to be given additional time to file a supporting memorandum. The court granted it, and then it gave a large packet of material to the district court, and I believe it gave a packet of material to me as I was exiting the courtroom, as I was leaving the courtroom, and one of the things that was not stapled, because it was too thick to be stapled, but one of the things that was included, I don't know, was paperclip, or it was jammed in there somehow, was an amended complaint. I never had a chance to review the amended complaint because I objected to...
Well, you said it was like a dog consuming its own tail.
That analogy was probably not the best analogy, Judge Posner. But we construed the motion as a Rule 59E motion. And the court's point about...
Did the plaintiff characterize it as a 59E?
Yeah.
So you think that's true? He said it was.
We would have to take him at what he was saying. That's how we would have to defend it, Your Honor. But the point is, and this court has held, that generally speaking, under Rule 15A, the way to file an amended complaint, whether it's the first time around or the second time around, is to file it with a Rule 15A motion. And one of the things that you are supposed to be doing in a Rule 15A motion is saying, why, what this amendment is, what you're proposing to amend, and how this cures any defect, any previous defect, that was never done in this case. So the court is correct. There was no amended complaint that was before the district court, and there isn't one now. So we don't know how it was that they would have proposed to cure the defect that Judge Hibbler found below. In fact, we don't know that in the memorandum, the Rule 59E motion. We don't know that in the Rule 59E memorandum. In fact, the memorandum and the motion refer to exhibits that were attached to the original complaint. They don't talk about an amended complaint, and none of the briefs on appeal propose to cure, how they're going to cure those defects. What we do have, and what is attached as an appendix to HUD's brief in this case, is a second complaint that was filed that's in district court. Strangely enough, that second complaint completely drops all the individually named federal employees. I think that is an implicit acknowledgement that there is no cause of action against those employees. So I really think the issue of the amended complaint in this case, at least in so far as their position goes, is a non-issue. The court did not abuse its discretion in denying the Rule 59E motion, and there certainly is nothing that is argued in the briefs, or there's been nothing argued here today which would support any basis for reversing the court's substantive rulings in this case, the dismissal of the case for lack of jurisdiction, or alternatively for failure to state a claim.
Just as a detail, how come this case is in the Northern District? Isn't Kankakee in the Central District?
The reason that the case is in the Northern District is because the corporate defendants reside within the Northern District. I believe they're either in Chicago or the northern suburbs. But the property, that's correct, is in the Central District. That's correct. Unless the court has any more questions, I would simply ask that it affirm the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Lang. Ms. Camden, I think your time expired, but we'll give you a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you. I'd just like to point out to the court at page 25 of the appendix of our opening brief, the order of the district court stating the following, that plaintiff's oral motion...
Sorry, what was that page again?
Page 25 of the appendix, Judge. The plaintiff's oral motion for leave to file an amended complaint as an exhibit is denied for the reasons stated in open court. And again, Your Honor, those reasons, the reason that the district court did so was because it found that any possible amendment could would be futile. And again, expressed his position, in fact, the only position, that the district court could not have found futility without examining the proposed amended complaint.
Okay, well, thank you very much to all counsel. Next case for argument.